Hey, this is Rich, and I'm here with Wim, and you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we take a fun, formative look at work and money for the rising professional. Today, we're doing a little bit of a mini-sode, for lack of a better phrase, but first, what's going on, good sir?
Living the dream, friend, living the dream. And you got some good news from one of our listeners, actually.
Yeah, man, we'll get into that, but in terms of pre-show, if you're enjoying Paychecks and Balances, don't forget to drop by and leave us a five-star review on iTunes. If you don't know how to do that, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/review. If you still don't want to go to iTunes, at least share the show with a friend via one of your social media networks, because there's probably someone who can benefit from the discussions that we're having here. So about that, good response we got from a listener.
So to follow up on Paychecks and Balances episode 8, girl asked us what's the quickest way to get a lowered interest rate, and we made several recommendations, which you can find on that episode. Well, one of which was just to call and ask, you know, hotline bling or credit card bling, I guess the it's maybe in this particular one.
I was going to try to make up a song, but I wasn't quick enough.
I did too. Like, the hotline bling came to my head and I was like, oh, I'm about to drop it. But I literally had no follow up for it.
So nothing.
I just had to go on and move to the next part of the conversation.
Yep.
But if something comes to you, you go ahead and jump in there. Pause. She was live tweeting us and she let us know two things. One, she was about to call her credit card company and she got an interest rate reduction of almost 10 points from 23.5 down to 16.6. just by making a phone call. And then she says that we are a really awesome podcast, which we appreciate. But then my recommendation for this week is call your credit cards now. I don't feel like there's anything you can lose from this conversation. And I would start with your highest APR credit card. So just call and ask, you know, can I get an interest rate reduction? Now, I don't know if you have some background in this. I don't think they always have to do a hard credit check, because I've definitely called and they're like, yeah. So I don't know how the process works, but I think sometimes they do. I think more when they're going to raise your balance, because I think she asked for two part, because one of the recommendations was to ask for a balance increase to improve credit utilization rate. I think she asked for both, but she
balance. So, on the other one. So I want to make sure that we're clear. So it's asking for more line of credit.
Yeah, credit line increase.
Yeah, there we go. I was like, I want to make it clear, and then I'm like, I'm actually making it less clear. Anyway.
So she asked for both. So I would start with one. I mean, you can ask for both, but I assume, as with most things, the more you ask for, the less your odds. So you might want to just start with, hey, can I get an interest rate reduction? And if they eagerly say yes, then maybe you entertain the conversation of also getting a higher line of credit.
Well, actually, while we're talking about credit, I'm saying you could do that if they give you what you want right away.
I actually thought you were about to launch into a conversation, so I'm glad you clarified that clarification, actually.
I know. It was about to get really awkward. It was going to be just us sitting here with just dead air in the background.
I'm like, yeah, well, actually. So we're glad to hear that, girl. Happy to help. Mm-hmm. And we would encourage, like I said, all our listeners to reach out this week. And if you have us another success story, let us know how it goes. Or even if you do not succeed, like I said, this is one of those things where you have everything to gain and nothing to lose. They're either going to say yes or no. Even if you don't succeed, if you could kind of let us know how the conversation went, if they gave you some background on the pros and cons. I do know, not all the times, but I have had some cards. Well, they'll write and tell me why they made the decision. So that's another benefit. They may send me a letter and says, you know, here's some information on your Equifax that I was, or your credit score, you know, that happens to come through Equifax that I otherwise would not have been made aware of. Or here's why we made the decision to increase or not decrease your credit, credit line. So you will be more informed by this conversation if you can get past the ego and perhaps the, you know, you may not have the same success story. You may get turned down, but if you get, I almost said turned on, but I guess if you get the answer you're looking for, you'll never know until you ask. And I'm telling you to ask.
Yeah. So a couple things. From what I've found, when you find out the decision by mail, as opposed to right there, like on the phone or right after you submit your app, I found that tends not to be a good thing, but that information that you mentioned is still helpful in terms of being able to see what it was that may have led to them declaring that way. So have you applied for credit before and found out only via mail? And then that's how it turned out that it was a positive decision?
It's been a long time. I've only opened one new card. Well, two now with the move in like the last 5 years.
Oh,
so
yeah.
My memory is blurry, and I got both of those. But I do remember I actually found out there was an error on my credit report by applying for a car that I was like, oh, yeah, I'll get this, no thing. And I got turned down, and then I got, well, in Colorado, is not the case in every state. Colorado, if you get turned down for a credit card offer, I guess a loan too, you are entitled to the reason and the justification behind it. And that letter actually let me know there was an error on my credit report. It didn't say there was an error. It said that you have a past due bill or outstanding debt or something like that. Something might have been with a creditor. And then from there, I went and got my free credit report, which you are credit report, which you are entitled to each year by the federal law. And once I did that, I found out there was an error on my credit report. So that's how I found that I needed to correct something on my credit report. And then eventually down the line, I got that car that I was looking for. So like I said, you'll be better off. And in that case, you know, I found out by happenstance, but at least I found out. Otherwise it would have just kind of been languishing on my report because it was wrong. They were sending it to the wrong person and they had the wrong social security number.
Yo, I'm glad you mentioned that because I got declined for a card. And so I eventually, a long time ago, I spoke about getting declined and then going back and I think calling their decline resolution line and they actually reversed the decision and gave me more than I even asked for. If I didn't cover that, I'll have to look through the archives. That'll be a conversation for another day. But I found out because I had like a Chase card in like 2005 that I paid off the balance or so I thought, but there was like $4 of a balance from like the interest or something that was left that I just like forgot about, and they declined me for a new card because of that $4 balance that was there. And it was like a system thing. So sometimes it'll even help you clear up stuff like that. It was a very weird circumstance. The other thing, they will increase your credit limit without a credit check on some occasions. Like that happened for Boobalkins, and I updated my salary info and all of that stuff in the system so that if they do a run to see who's eligible for a line of increase without a hard credit check, that hopefully I'll pop up there. But you do want to, if you do call in and you're asking for them to increase your credit limit or for them to decrease your interest rate, if they start collecting all your information again, be very, specific about ensuring they're not going to press the button and run a hard credit check, because that happened to someone I know where they were really just asking the question and the person was like, can you tell me this? Can you tell me that? And never said anything about the fact that it was going to be a hard credit check. And it ended up going onto their credit report that way when the person called and just really just had a question about their account and what was possible. So that's something else you want to look out for, because not everyone who's in customer service is good at doing their job. And in situations where they make mistakes like this, they're just collecting information and not telling you why. It's also your responsibility to make sure that you understand why they're asking for what they're asking for.
Agreed. Good advice, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta stay woke for those things. But one thing I did want to cover today. So I saw a tweet from @RevolutionsClub. Christy Mims. I don't know who this person is. I just happen to have a career advice timeline for any tweets that are about career advice. And it said, if your job is killing your confidence, chances are it's not the right job for you. And so this is something that I retweeted on my timeline. And it's something that resonated with me because I had a job before where it did affect my confidence. Like it was a job where there were several periods where I was like, yo, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. Like I'm making mistakes I shouldn't be making. Should I really be here? And I really started doubting myself. Now, there were a lot of other things within this job that I did well. But at the end of the day, looking back, that job that I was in, it turned out that wasn't the right career for me. And if I were to go back to that place now and tell those same people where I am today, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them were surprised. Like, oh, wow, you know, you were okay at this job when you were here, but you've went on to do this other thing because you realized where your talents really lie. So I asked you before the show your thoughts, and it sounded like you don't completely agree with the if your job is killing your confidence, chances are it's not the right job for you logic.
I agree with the principle, but I don't think it's that simple. And it goes back to a conversation we've had different iterations of across several shows. And that's the question I wrote down was, how much of your happiness is your job responsible for? So yes, I do think your job should not kill your confidence. But at the same time, I don't know that your job is responsible for confidence building. And by extension, I don't know if your job is ultimately responsible for making you happy. And I kind of feel like that might be a misalignment that a lot of us have, is my job is supposed to make me happy versus I should determine what makes me happy, then get a job doing that.
Mm.
So a lot of times, well, I won't say a lot of times, there has for a fact, I know I've had conversations with people like this, where hire people and they'll want to change all the things about the job or the offer or the environment. And we're like, no, that like, you need to go work for a company that does that. Like that all
there's a relationship metaphor within this, by the way.
There always is.
Yes. Yeah.
But you know, all those things sound noble and good and great, and this is not the job for you then. And I think sometimes people seem to think that it's the job's job to mold to them. And that's where I kind of go, you know, I feel like that's a dangerous position to be in, that every job should cater and mold to each individual that houses it, versus I feel like you should know, or you should get, you know, over time. I think on both sides, during a probationary period, if one exists, or as you're working the job, you're both learning about one another. But if it's not a fit for you, then I feel like the onus is on you to change, not the job. In 90% of scenarios, sometimes the job is bad and like maybe we need training in place. Maybe we need to set up something to make you succeed. And that if the right.
Sometimes you have a crappy manager.
Yeah. If the right processes or whatever, or the right. If we did things ideally or to the degree possible, then you would be successful. Then your confidence would be built. But I think that's usually not the case. It feels like a lot of people want the job to cater to them. And I'm like, I don't know that's the job's responsibility. Like that's, you know, it can be, but have you taken the responsibility of getting the job that you want to do that will make you happy, that will build your confidence? Have you found where your talent is?
You know, and that's a mistake that I've seen a number of people make. And I even had a conversation recently where someone was talking about their job and all of these things that they don't like and how they don't get any work-life balance and how they're always covering for someone else and how their boss doesn't take any steps to get the barriers out of their way. But what was interesting about this conversation is I asked the person, like, have you spoken to your boss about any of this? And they were like, no, not yet. And I'm like, well, this has been like, I've been listening to you talk about this for like months now, and you haven't had one conversation with your boss about it, and you're sitting here stewing and pissed off and banging the hell out of your keyboard. Like, you need to take that step and have that conversation. And if you really are as fed up with things as you are there, I mean, at least be able to walk away and say that, you know what, I tried to have some conversations, I tried to see what was fixable and what wasn't. Because if nothing else, why you're leaving or why you're looking is going to come up in an interview elsewhere. And if it comes out that you're just like, yo, I just sat and stewed and decided it was time to go, what's that going to mean for the next place you go to? Are you going to be the person who just lets things fester, or are you going to be able to have an open conversation about what's on your mind and try to work toward a solution rather than just quitting when things get difficult? So that's something else to think about.
Yeah, I think you also, and this is why it's difficult. Now, don't get me wrong, this is easier said than done. But I don't even think most people have worked through like this three-part tripod or formula, if you will, is do you know what job you would do if you could? You know, going back to the old metaphor, if you hit the lottery today, would you keep doing your job now? Would you work at all? Or what job would you do? And then
on this couch,
can you answer it? Does that job exist? And if it exists, can you do it? Because it might exist, but maybe you can't do it. And then if you can, then why aren't you doing it? But I just feel like most people haven't even took that first step and say, if I were to do any job that I want to do, what is it? And then determining, does that job exist, or do I need to create it, as far as entrepreneurs go?
And then if you don't take those steps, do you really want it?
Yeah, exactly. And another piece of that that, you know, hasn't particularly come up in this conversation, but I do think is an element of it we've talked about, is you can do jobs that you love for a little amount of money, or you can do jobs that you hate for a lot of amount of money. And sometimes that's, or, and I'm, you know, within that spectrum, there's going to be something in the middle. That's part of the conversation as well, is, you know, in that, that example from earlier, if it, it does exist and you can do it, but it pays a third or a fourth or a fifth or a sixth or all down the line of what you make now, would your happiness be relative? I feel like a lot of these conversations, I want the best of all worlds. I want a well-paying job that makes me happy, that has a work-life balance or no balance at all, or as far as all balance that caters to me. And it's like, you're describing a dream, and that's cool. It's nice to dream.
That's
but
why it's a dream job.
Yeah. You're not describing a job. You're only describing the dream part of the job.
Yeah, it's rare you're going to find a job that checks all of those boxes. If usually if it has all the perks and benefits, you're going to make a little bit less on the base. Or if it's a high base, you're going to work like hell. Like, there's always going to be some type of trade off that that you have to make. So the other thing I was going to say, and as I thought about this quote here, is when I look at the job that I have now, I probably wouldn't be in this job now if it weren't for that horrible experience that made me question myself and had me doubting at times, because a lot of those skills that I picked up, as painful of a process as it was, they were skills that made me attractive to where I went next, which then made me attractive to where I am now. So you may be in a job where it's like, yo, this sucks. And you said something earlier. Now, that job where I didn't have the best performance of where I wasn't the greatest of all time, I thought that that's what I wanted to do for my career. It was my third job out of school, and I was like, great, you know, I'm gonna go back into this more HR specific type of role, and I'm gonna have, you know, all of these great experiences, and I'm gonna be this, you know, big director of human resources. And then I realized by doing that job, and the other thing was, I stayed there probably longer than I should have. I was there for, I don't know, probably 3 years. And that it, well, I guess in today's time, that's like forever. But to me, it didn't go by like super slow or anything like that. It just felt like it went by at a regular pace. But I probably, after the second year, I probably should have been looking for something outside of the organization that was more aligned with my interest area. But I think I even had some complacency at the time where I probably stayed around longer than I should have. But that experience that at the time sucked really set the tone for the next two jobs I had. So I basically went from, crap, I don't know what I'm doing, to being a lead, to being in a really good position at a really good company. So if you do find yourself like questioning, and outside of the trying to make the job your source of happiness, just know that there probably is some value in whatever you're doing that's going to come in handy in some form or another down the road, even though it may not be obvious to you.
Well, I have what I know this is a mini, so I have what I think is a good or quick question. And it, I think it'd be good for you to answer if you have an answer. Yeah. One thing that I've struggled with over the years is even identifying where the jobs are at. And I mean that in terms of, I think I have an idea of something I want to do. What's the job title for it? Because job titles are so, at least in my field, diverse. Like I can come up with 10 titles that describe the exact same job that I'm doing right now. And I just wondered if you found a way to solve that. So when I go out here and I look on these huge aggregate websites for, hey, I want a job doing this, I haven't found readily. I got to like literally search for all those terms to get the full breadth of all the jobs I could possibly do. And I wonder if you found a solution to that.
Well, yeah. So it still takes some research. And this is, and I wrote about this a long time ago about how I've used LinkedIn as a career consultant. So chances are, if there's a job that you want to do, you probably know somebody doing that job. So actually, I'll test this and maybe you prove me wrong. So when you've looked and thought you knew what you wanted to do next, was there someone that you knew who was doing that job elsewhere?
Well, that's usually how I found it. I either someone tells me like, hey, I think you'd be good for this job, which goes back to our networking and mentoring and working with your peers. And then they tell me, and I was like, and never in a million years would I have ascribed that title to that job, but it sounds awesome. You know, send me the link. But yeah. if I was out randomly looking, I probably would have never come across that myself.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. The same job can have a million different titles across companies. But one thing that I did that helped me research is I would find somebody that was doing a job that I wanted to do, and then I would look at their LinkedIn profile. And I would see what titles they had leading up to that. And then also, if they were at a bigger company, I would click on that company and search by that title that that person has, and then find people who were in similar positions and see what type of titles they had in their background. Or if I was on someone's profile on LinkedIn, in the sidebar, sometimes you'll see similar to or similar profiles. You'll click on that and you just start to get a sense of the different titles that people use for similar work. And you'll also get a sense of the path or the background those people have come from, so you can optimize and modify your own resume and your own LinkedIn profile. So that's how I've like come up with different title ideas. It's from just kind of like following a trail of looking at different people's profiles and just kind of making a list of the different titles that I've seen people use. And then you can even go to some of those companies' websites and see if they have any current openings and see what title they're using there. And if you start plugging that stuff into a search on LinkedIn, it's just going to bring up even more people who you can look at, click on their background. Of course, if you're like stalking people's profiles, you probably want to turn that setting off that shows who you are and your avatar and everything else. But I've found it's a little manual. Like, it's not the millennial press a button and here are all of the answers, but you can get a lot of information from just looking at different people's LinkedIn profiles at different companies to see how that same job is described.
No, I'm glad you say that. I mean, that definitely answers my question. I hope gives some people another avenue for doing that. I haven't actually even tried that one. What I've done, you know, just to share with folks for what I've used, because I did realize this was an issue, is, you know, I network with a lot of people in the same field, but they might be in a different company.
Right.
And so I just started taking down titles from the emails. So if they email me and I see, you know, a title at the bottom, it's different from my own, but seems to be aligned with the same field, I just started writing or capturing those. I didn't literally write them down, but I had this long Excel spreadsheet, which in itself is telling, because in some capacity, we're all doing facets of the same job, but that thing is probably 20 different titles.
Yeah,
people doing those jobs. So that's what I started to do. I didn't know yet. Like you said, like a millennial fast click search way to do it. I'm sure. Well, I don't know because I haven't used it, but maybe the Department of Labor has like terms, like other jobs that may fall under these titles. Yeah. But I haven't readily seen it. And if anyone has any experience with this area, you know, please write in and let us know what you use or you've done, or is this something you haven't had to overcome?
Yeah, yeah. And what you'll find, even when you're looking and you're updating your LinkedIn profile, you'll want to try to use whatever you find to be the most general term for that, because you have to think from the recruiter's perspective too. And a lot of these companies now have access to this premium LinkedIn platform that they essentially use as their applicant tracking system. I've had it at the last three jobs that I've had it at every job I've been at now. And you got to kind of think about how they're going to search for someone that has this skill set. And they're usually going to start with some of the more general terms, or they're at least going to have the most general term as part of their search string. So as you're doing this research, you're going to want to see like, okay, what's the closest to kind of what I'm seeing most commonly? Is there a way that I can write this where I know that if someone's looking for HR generalist that I have that in my search string, what else is it called? Is there another way that I can also describe this in my profile so that the keyword is there? So yeah, there's a lot that you can do on LinkedIn without having the premium platform that'll get you a lot of that information that's going to help you be found and help you find what it is that you're looking for. Yeah, that's it. I feel like I went into my zone.
No,
and cool. I looked back down and it was like 4 minutes later.
All good. Question answered.
Cool. So said this was going to be a mini-sode. It was more like a semi-sode. It feels like instead of mini, it was like somewhere in between like normal length of the show and like just like a little shorter. But nonetheless, we want to thank you for listening to Paychecks and Balances. Again, if you have questions for us, don't forget to email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. Also, ask.fm/paybalances. So we did have a question that we have an answered. Actually, I'm going to read it real quickly and see how it goes. And if we need to revisit, we will. Have you guys ever heard of websites like Kiva.org? You loan small amounts of money to people around the world in developing countries who repay with interest. It is definitely not get rich quick, but you do get to earn interest while changing someone's life for the better. Have you heard of that?
I have not, but that sounds like a really cool concept.
Yeah, I heard of this because I worked for, and I'm trying to figure out how to describe this. I worked for an international nonprofit that invested in social entrepreneurship and also dealt with microfinance. So I have familiarity with Kiva and similar types of establishments, but I myself have not thought to do that as a way to kind of earn some money while also creating good in the world. But it's something that maybe I should look into, and maybe there was someone from Kiva like who just got like a free ad. But since it's a nonprofit, it's okay. But anyway, thanks again for listening. And yeah, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes if you haven't done that already. If you don't know how, paychecksandbalances.com/review. And that should be it for this week until we drop that Q&A episode, I think. Well, no, maybe that this episode was longer. I won't drop that. We'll see. And if you're on our email list, you'll know. But until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.